Good afternoon and thanks for coming. I'm really happy to be able to share this with you. It was very nip and tuck getting it up on the internet before this presentation. So I want to thank everybody from our consortium of community groups and scientists who helped make this possible. That picture there is a few folks that were out on a shrimp boat in Mobile Bay. The first time we went out to test our protocols to see if we could actually do seafood sampling in the middle of a work day so that the shrimpers could do this with us and for us without interfering with their business. And the lady with the blonde hair on the left is Moma Subra, last year's Downing Smith Award winner, and also a MacArthur Prize winner, who's a community scientist, not affiliated with any universities, who does a lot of work in the field in the Gulf region. And she was instrumental, absolutely essential in making this happen. And I'd like to acknowledge right now our NIEHS grant. It was part of a consortium grant that was given after the DWH oil spill. And it was provided by the NIEHS. The project is called GC Harms, and we'll just get going on it. And the first thing is, I made absolutely no money doing this project from anybody, and in fact, probably lost some in the process, and I'm not getting anything out of it later either. Okay, this is a concept map of where we want to go with this, just a brief overview of the structure of the project. It's a project with many moving parts in three states, encompassing Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, and a bit of Texas as a control group. And if you look at it in terms of the profile of the coastline, it's about 7,500 miles of coastline, mostly because of Louisiana's weird coastline. And the health disparities and cumulative risk are important factors in all of these communities. I did not include EJ up there because a few of the communities don't really see themselves as EJ communities. They truly are by the criteria most people apply to it, but they don't choose to characterize themselves that way, so we don't. Next thing, overview of the environmental health literacy concepts that we worked with in creating a citizen science network of fishermen, and also how it related to the community hub coordinators, who actually were the feet on the ground in each of these fishing communities, and the scientists themselves, many of whom were bench toxicologists who'd never worked with people before. Well, I shouldn't say that, but they've never worked with communities before, especially on an intimate basis where they'd have to go out and talk to them. And the next part, we're going to look at some of the tools and methodologies we've created, and six things that we developed during this process to take the message out, and before we even had a message to take, to get information in. And it's a dialogic process, it's iterative, it's multi-directional, and all of those things. CBPR is the overarching conceptual framework for it. Everybody here probably knows about this by now. I don't have to talk about it anymore, which is a wonderful thing I've seen over time. As I remember when CBPR was, whoa, what's that? And you know, don't have to say that anymore. But the main thing is, it began with a research topic that was important to the communities, so important that they were actually screaming and yelling about it. When in 2010, when the DWH well blew out, it was the very beginning of brown shrimp season, and they couldn't go out. And that is a bad thing for a shrimper. And then, of course, bad thing for people that make money from recreational things, and a very bad thing for people that have a love for the Gulf, because you're watching what's happening. So this was very important to the community, and we tried to translate that energy and that concern into momentum that would carry us through 5 years. It's a long project. This is the consortium project's basic specs. This is what we were trying to do, understand the long-term health effects, exposure to oil and dispersants, especially from consuming Gulf seafood. And a little proviso on that, we're looking at polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons of the petrogenic variety, which are crude oil components, not the kind you get from burning stuff, grilling meat, smoking cigarettes, and things of that nature. And petrogenics aren't well known, so that became an issue because that's basic research that had to be done in the middle of a massive public health project. The consortium is composed of Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, and Texas community groups, and I'll go into who they are in a minute, and the academic institutions are UTMB, University of Texas Medical Branch, University of Pennsylvania, Texas A&M, University of Galveston, which is a marine biology station, and LSU. And these are the projects. Number one is a clinical cohort of coastal residents, 100 residents in Biloxi, Gulfport, and Houma, Louisiana. And this was a clinical intervention where blood was taken, urine was taken, and these were analyzed for PAH content, as well as a number of other indicators of health. And part of what came back to the community with this was a massive physical that each person would get. And they get a personal consultation with the physician who was doing it. The next one, number two, is an exposure assessment biomonitoring research, looking at seafood and the human population that consumes it. And it's still going on, especially the biomonitoring / biomarker research. That's happening at Penn. And I don't think it's going to be finished until before the project is actually not funded anymore. So it'll have to be a no cost extension. And a community vulnerability and resilience research project. That's number three component. Number four is the one that I'm working on. It's community outreach, education, and dissemination. They call it the CODC, Community Outreach and Dissemination Core. Each one of the consortium projects, of which there were four, had one of these cores. There's one in Florida, there's one at Tulane, one at LSU that's independent of the RLSU connection, and then ours. And these are the community groups we're working with, Louisiana Environmental Action Network in Baton Rouge, and they're kind of the overarching information portal for the community, for all the communities, because they have a really good website and somebody who can maintain it. Nobody else did within the consortium. Lower Mississippi Riverkeeper, that's a regional thing, and Paul Orr, the Lower Mississippi Riverkeeper, is also the guy who does the website for LEAN. Center for Environmental and Economic Justice in Biloxi, Mississippi. The Mississippi Vietnamese American Community Partners in Gulfport, Biloxi. The United Houma Nation in Houma, Louisiana, and that's a Native American tribe. And Alabama Fisheries Cooperative in Codan by Labatry, Alabama, which is really, really rural. These are all pretty rural, but that is probably the most isolated one. Bayou Interfaith Shared Community Organizing in called BISCO out of Thibodaux, Louisiana. And then once again, just reiterating who the academic partners are. Okay, now looking at what these communities kind of share in terms of health disparities, this is something that's just pervasive along the Gulf. Now, we could have picked any community, really, along the Gulf Coast, and we'd find the same things, more or less. But one of the major things, I'm not going to read them to you, but I'm going to focus on lack of access to health care. Each one of these states that we're working in directly obstructed the adoption of the ACA, in fact, refused to accept it, and they do not make it easy for people to sign up for a state network of insurance. They just don't do that. So we have a lot of people that don't have health care, haven't had health care. Some of them have never had a medical home or even a physician visit. Very unusual to find. And I'm also going to look at the Bigger Waters Act, because this impacts me too, because I live in Galveston Island. And this is an act that's going to take away the federal subsidy for flood insurance this coming April. We'll get our first bill in free market land. It's not going to be pleasant or pretty for a lot of people. And many of these people are going to have to probably consider, if they can't make mortgage payments, selling their house and getting out of the area. Well, we don't really know what that holds for the future, but that's scary. People talk about it all the time. And marginalization by culture and language, and this is particularly acute with the Vietnamese population by language, especially the older Vietnamese, and those are the fishermen we're working with. Younger Vietnamese people are not fishing as much because of what they've seen their parents go through. And the Hoa. The Hoas, it's mostly cultural because they speak English. They have a kind of Cajun Creole amalgamation language. There's words that you won't hear in French, really, but they came from French. There's Choctaw words, and then there's English. And it sets them apart, the way they talk. It sets them apart, and they have been the subject of a lot of what you would have to term racism over the course of events. And a couple of the people that we worked with in their group had never been to school because they weren't allowed to go to school. They're that old. They're my age, and they never really had an education. They weren't allowed to. So now we're looking at the cumulative risk burden. Once again, this is a shared burden, and there's a large and pervasive energy industry presence all along the Gulf. Refineries, petrochemical facilities, storage facilities, LPG gas facilities, and then, of course, the offshore stuff that started this in the first place. It's all over the place. There's a lot of leaking infrastructure. There's a lot of untended, orphaned wells that are on land and offshore. And this is all part of the mix. And chemical security. There's a lot of hazardous cargoes being ferried around in the Gulf in that area. And Mobile Bay in particular, going up into New Orleans, you can see this. And with our Galveston Bay being used as a control, we have going into Houston, all kinds of stock chemicals and oil at 24 hours a day. And just to tell you what that means, we had a bunker fuel spill in 2014, and we were using our bay as a control because we hadn't gotten any DWH oil. Suddenly, we don't have a control anymore. That kind of thing happens, though, quite frequently. And then the last thing, and this is the shared climate risk. All these folks are subject to sea level rise. These are real low-lying coastal communities, some of which are 0 feet above sea level, some, and they range up to about 9. That's not much. And Louisiana in particular has the most land loss through subsidence and land loss from saltwater infiltration and the channels that have been cut into the marsh, mostly by industry to facilitate moving barges and things, you know, from on land to offshore. And the resumption of the energy exploration, of course, is something that people are ambivalent about because a lot of these folks work both as fishermen and in the energy industry because fishing is seasonal. And so they know what they're doing, and it's a trade-off, but they do think about it. It's not an unknowing thing. And of course, the last thing, climate-related disease vectors. There is more West Nile than there used to be. And of course, dengue is something that on our border with Mexico and Texas, we're beginning to see more of that. And will that become more pervasive? We don't know. This is a diagram of the conceptual goals in terms of environmental health science and environmental health literacy for the project. I want to just go up to the very top. What this is based on is the need and use of the various people that would be getting these concepts and using them. If they need them and they will use them, we're considered that really important, but it's not mutually exclusive. If people want to learn more than they actually need to do their part in this project, that's really fine. The top, though, we have the scientific people learning a translational approach to their using their findings. This was a real learning experience for a bunch of bench scientists who had never done this before. Cultural fluency and risk messaging, very important. Luckily, we have an OCDoc from the University of Pennsylvania, Marilyn Howarth, who is really good at this and can communicate to people in a jargonless way. And the other scientists are learning this too. And the last thing, the collaborative interpretation. Now that's something that most bench scientists are not very keen on. They interpret their data, but this is a community project, and the data and the interpretation really bears on things like the Gulf brand of seafood. What does it mean to a fisherman if you say, oh, you have a underlying more or less baseline of polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons in the Gulf. So you're always going to have a little bit of that in the seafood. And they go, what? It isn't the DW. No, it's not. This is something that's there for a number of reasons. So we're working on that right now, interpreting these data so that it will satisfy their need and the scientific ethics. Very, very difficult. Okay. These are the things we're trying to accomplish with what we're doing. They're kind of, it's kind of canned, kind of stock, but this is all the stuff we're trying to do. I got 5 minutes, so I'm going to speed it up. Okay, our first round of fishermen's forums were scoping forums. They happened after we got the grant in 2011 and 2012. And we went around to these various communities that I'll show you at the end and asked these questions of the fishermen and anybody else who was attending. We took that data and the fishermen helped us design a sampling matrix with this data so we know where to go to get things in areas that had been affected. And here's an example of where some of these forums happened. The one in the right is a little more normal. It's a bunch of people at a meeting of a fishing club. On the top left, we're on a boat. It's very dark. It's 3:30 in the morning when we're doing this. And this is Mumba Subra going over the protocols and talking about toxicology with the folks who are going out fishing. And this is just a reprise of the first picture, using a shrimping table to make a sample. This is our hub coordinator grouping, and we're missing here the people from CEJ and Biloxi and the Alabama group. They patched into this meeting by phone. They weren't able to make it. This is what we cover at these meetings. Now, this was a particularly juicy one because we had some data to work with. What is risk? What is risk perception? Why do you communicate risk? We're talking about these various topics with it. And I'm sorry, I'm not going to leave it up very long. I just have to move and groove. Okay. Survey of exposure assessment and the toxicological characterization. This was important because we're doing biomarker research in Philadelphia that is pretty important, kind of crucial, in fact, in terms of what sort of fate and transport mechanisms are operating with these PAHs as they go through the body and become something else, and then become something else again, maybe. And some of these other products might be a little more toxic than the parent. How long do they stay in the body? How does that affect you? So, once again, that's up in the air. And the communities had to learn to live with uncertain science, just as the scientists had to learn to live with communicating science before it's ready. A very difficult thing to do. Then we were unpacking our original seafood consumption guideline. It doesn't look like this anymore, but this is the first one we were able to present to them. And it's in terms of location, species, and date at first. And then we worked on getting the word out. What are the different mechanisms and recognized community channels for communication where you live? And we got, these are all different. But this is a compilation of everything we got. And this is going to happen after our next meeting, December 5th. This stuff will start happening in the communities. Then we had a design charrette because the community wanted to do something with the sampling we did, make a map out of it. So they wanted to work on a site map and a consumption guideline graphic. And these are the parameters for it. And so this is what we worked on first. This was the sample site graphic, and these are the parameters we wanted to design into it. And this is the thing itself. Now this has a DIY kind of look to it, but this was done by the Louisiana Environmental Action Network, not by, you know, university. We worked together to develop this. It was better for them to host it because access was much easier than getting into our websites. And we wanted the world to be able to do that. Now, write down that URL and you can go play with this yourself. It's really cool. And these are the aspects of it, the different parameters. The major thing is the pop-up data box, which will tell you what was caught, when it was caught, how it was caught, what was in it, average PAH content, and then compare it to a level of concern. And if there was more than one sample taken at that site, it will give you standard deviation. And believe it or not, the community wanted standard deviation as part of this. I never thought they would, but they did. Okay. This is how the map is designed. There are three levels to it. A quick start level that's pretty easy to use. You just get the boxes. And there are terminology and definitions that are either linked or there's a specific bar at the top you can hit for that. And then scientific processes, like a really cool GCMS infographic and how the LOCs were derived. Now that's a difficult one and it's highly simplified, but they wanted that on there. And my email is the portal for questions, and I imagine sooner or later I'm going to have a lot of them because this just went up. This is what the calculator will look like. Not really. This is what the spreadsheet that it's based on looks like. But it basically uses the basic dose response parameters of toxicology to calculate how much of something you can eat based on how many times a week you want to do it and how much you weigh. And what your risk, if you're going to accept 1 in 10,000 excess cancer risk, you can eat a whole bunch. At 1 in 100,000, it goes down. 1 in a million, it goes way down. But there's also some things in here to account for children in terms of algorithm, wrinkle being triggered if you're between 15 pounds and 49 pounds. And then another toggle between 1 in 10,000 and 1 in 100,000 if you want to vary that risk. You can see how it changes. And what's next, this will be our last Fisherman's Forum. It would be January, February 2016. And I have closure here, but I think that's probably premature. I don't know that there'll ever be closure to this situation, but we're going to try and work it out so that at least when by the time funding runs out on our project, the communities will have the basic information they need, and we'll keep them apprised of what happens with the toxicological research that will have to be ongoing. And I'm going to visit with each one of the cooperating fishermen personally and show them what we got in their catch and explain it to them. And that'd be a little difficult because some of them are hard to find, but I'm going to devote a couple of weeks to that. And here's a picture, a collage of some of the people we've worked with. Starting at the top, that's Pass Christian, Mississippi. Over here is to the right is Grand Savannah, Mississippi. And this is Mobile Bay, the guy with the yellow gloves on. And the guy who's chucking oysters is the Lower Mississippi Riverkeeper, who also designed and put in the website. So he's kind of a ringer. He's not really a fisherman, but he'd like to go out and do this. And this is the acknowledgments and co-authors. There's a million of them. If you want to see who the names are, you can go to the place at the APAJ website where this presentation is archived. But these are the organizations and some of the people that are from the various universities. And a couple of graduate students were absolutely fantastic with this. Joe Scherer and Daniel Jackson, I just want to mention them. And also mention Paul Orr again of the Lower Mississippi Riverkeeper. And that's it. That's the totemic animal of the Seeley Center for Environmental Health and Medicine, the brown pelican. So I'd like to end with that. Thank you.